जय सुपारिकार श्री श्री गुरु ग्रंग श्री श्री गंधार्व के गिरिधारी हरि ज्यो की जय गौर हरि बोल। Okay, I thought we'd read this morning, resuming our reading of Sri Guru and His Grace. We're beginning a subheading called A Religious Jungle. And someone asked, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, why are there so many religions, different religions in the world? Srila Sridhar Maharaj replies, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava posed this same question. Why in the name of religion are there so many isms in the world? Huh. Prabhupada used to use that a lot also, the isms. Mohammedanism, Christianityism or Christianism, Hinduism. Will every ism that is found here independently take me to the goal? Or is there any gradation? Krishna told him, when the creation began, I transmitted the truths of religion into the heart of Brahma, the creator. And from Brahma, that came to his disciples. But according to the different capacity of those disciples, what they received was a little changed when they delivered it to others. When I gave it to Brahma, that knowledge was one, Brahma told his disciples. And when they received it in the soil of their heart, it entered, but with some modification. Again, when they gave delivery to their disciples, there was more modification. It became lost due to the vitiating nature of the mundane plane. One point is the difference in the receiver, and another in the succession. So originally, the truth was given to Lord Brahma. I transmitted the truths of religion into the heart of Brahma, and from him, then to his disciples. But each one, according to, had di the disciples had different capacities, understood it a little bit differently. The truth underwent some modification, and then it was passed to their disciples and their disciples and their disciples. In this way, Srila Sridhar mentions that it became lost due to the vitiating nature of the mundane plane. So one point is the difference in the receiver and another in the succession. So the receiver modifies, but also what he's heard, that has already been modified also. Because from guru to disciple, guru disciple, the disciple becomes the guru. The disciple of that guru, he becomes a guru, he has his disciples, and each time some change can happen, modification takes place. So not only the disciple, but also from the guru, the receiver, and the succession itself is creating some modification. So gradually the truth was modified, and now we see that the religious world is a jungle. So Prabhupada introduced Bhagavad Gita as it is, because previous to that, there was only Bhagavad Gita, whatever you want it to mean. The Bhagavad Gita as I think it, Bhagavad Gita as you think it, Bhagavad Gita as we manufacture it in our minds, Bhagavad Gita as we speculate it should be. So many Bhagavad Gitas, dozens and hundreds. Prabhupada saw the need for Bhagavad Gita as it is, and still there is a great need for that, because still this tendency for speculation is so strong within us. You saw yesterday, it became a little angry with Leela Sundari because for her speculation. Well, I shop at Pathmark. I have this little thing. It's okay. It always works for me. But the advertisement said you had to have Pathmark's Perks card. And we have no Pathmark Perks card. Right, Leela?
Right.
Right. But but it worked the last time I was there. Nothing changes. These stores don't change. And the reason it was concerned to me is because, well, one, I don't want you walking there and find out, oh, you can't, it's no, the you don't have the proper thing to take advantage of that sale. But they make these advertisements and they have all this fine print. And so many times we, you know, think we're going to take advantage of some sale and they get there. Oh, although the advertisement is for, you know, December 1st through December 7th, this was actually a two-day sale. The thing that you want, that was part of a two-day sale, and that was over yesterday. So, things like that are happening. You go to the register with four items. No, there's a limit of two. So you're charged the regular price for the other two. It's just on and on. Because part of advertisement, advertising is you make things sound wonderful, right? And you attract people to your store because they see something wonderful. But sometimes it's not quite so wonderful. So, and also, at the holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, other holidays, and they issue these special cards or something just for those times. And if you make a purchase of $300 within a 1 month period, then you get $50 off of your next purchase of $100 or more or something like that. So they're always doing different types of promotions like this. So whatever worked last week isn't necessarily going to work this week. And so I thought, well, prudence, we should be prudent. Prudence would dictate that we make sure that this card is actually going to work before sending someone seven or eight blocks walking to the store to get something. So immediately the speculation began. Well, it worked before. Well, why? I have a card, whatever. Well, then we began examining things closely. And if you look at the little card that's pictured in the advertisement, then you will think to ask the questions which I asked of Leela Sundari. Does your card say Pathmark Perks card? No, it does not. So the words are different. Yes, the words are different. And does it have the same shape as this card? No, mine has a different shape. And are the colors the same? No, the colors are different. So the shape is different. The words are different. The name is different. The colors are different. Everything is different. But she's absolutely sure, no, it's the same thing. What could be the problem? So then we look on the, so then I'm going to find the phone number to call the store. So I look on the web, the internet, to find, look up Pathmark, we'll call the store. Can't find the phone number, but we find a whole section, Pathmark Perks Card. So click on the section, Pathmark Perks Card. And on the page, there are only two places where the word perk is used. And neither one of them describes a card that they issue. So the fact is that there actually is no Pathmark's perk card. It does not exist. And yet they tell you that it's required to take advantage of this special that they're offering. So they have four cards pictured on their web page. The Advantage Club card, which is the one that you have. Then some bonus something or other. Then there's something for iPods and iPhones, something like that, like electronic something or other. Then there's an online special card. But there is absolutely no Pathmark Perks card listed anywhere on their website. This is the world we live in. So, last resort, a little more searching. How did I find it? Somehow I found the phone number for the local store that we're actually going to. Okay, so call the store. This Pathmark Perks card is required. We have no such card, but we have this Advantage Club card. Will that work? Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. Okay. But why do this? Because the only one that can really answer a question is someone who is an authority on the question. Authority on the subject. So in this case, Pathmark, the store, they're the authority. If anyone's going to know what qualifies for their special, their promotion, it's going to be Pathmark. They are the authority. So in spiritual life, Krishna is the authority. And Krishna's agents, his representatives, they are the authority. So Bhagavad Gita as it is. So many Bhagavad Gitas as you speculate it, as you want Krishna to be. As you want to be Krishna, okay, here's a Bhagavad Gita where you can be Krishna. You want Krishna to be the impersonal, Brahman? Oh, here's a Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is the impersonal Brahman. You want Krishna to tell you that the highest function for a human being is to do your duty? Okay, here's Bhagavad Gita that tells you, do your duty, right? Don't worry about surrendering to God. Do your duty. Don't worry that you are spirit soul. Just do your duty. Bhagavad Gita that tell you to be a karmi. That's what they are. And that's advertised as Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita that tells you to be a yogi. Bhagavad Gita that tells you to be a mayavadi. All kinds of Bhagavad Gitas. And Prabhupada, saw that, well, this is all nonsense. This is not Bhagavad Gita. There's necessity to have a Bhagavad Gita that's authority. And the authority is Krishna. So what is Krishna saying? Where's that Bhagavad Gita? So Prabhupada gave us that Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is, in English. Where Krishna is the authority, and his agent, his representative, Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada, he is telling what Krishna is telling. He is representing, without change, without modification, what Krishna intended us to glean and understand and know from his conversation with his disciple, Arjuna. What he was telling Arjuna, no one else could figure it out. But Prabhupada knew what it was because he is an actual authority on Bhagavad Gita and on Krishna. So, and Prabhupada explains, there is some difference between his Bhagavad Gita and the others. And what is that difference? Oh, from his Bhagavad Gita, people are actually becoming devotees of Krishna. There's the difference. And the other Bhagavad Gitas, they're not producing devotees of Krishna. So that's the difference. What is authoritative? What is speculation? And, our nature, this is the disease of conditioned life, is to think, I'm the authority. So if I'm the authority, then I can speculate about anything the other authorities have to say. So Krishna says, whatever, something in Bhagavad Gita, he teaches the yoga system. Oh, well, then that's the important thing. I'll speculate. I'm, instead of hearing from a guru who is actually substantially connected with Krishna, I will just make my own idea. Oh, you know what's important about Bhagavad Gita? Be a yogi. Follow the path of yoga. That's what's vital. Or that search for the Krishna within. What Krishna without is telling Arjuna is to Arjuna, I'm not speaking to you outside, actually. I'm inside of you. And that's what you should search for. The Krishna, the knowledge within. And so that idea is, no, there is no personal Krishna. I don't exist. Arjuna, you're seeing me as a person, but actually I don't exist as a person. I'm an impersonal Brahman, an impersonal spirit, which you can only understand by meditation, not by seeing. You can only understand through renunciation, etc. Not by surrender. So, but that's not what Bhagavad Gita is about. They say, oh, Bhagavad Gita is the battlefield is, the battlefield between this and that. No, the battlefield was the battlefield where the fighting was taking place between the Pandavas and the Kurus. Kurukshetra, that's what it was. Not some imaginary battlefield of speculation. No, and here are two persons, Krishna and Arjuna, the Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Arjuna, another person who is his disciple and friend. And the friend is bewildered. I don't know what to do. I'm overcome by sentiment. I'm overcome by illusion. Because support my brother Yudhishthir, to reclaim his kingdom, I'll have to fight with my brothers. Not actual brothers, but stepbrothers, the Kurus, Duryodhan and so many, 100 of them. They grew up together. Dhritarashtra was like the father of the Pandavas. He helped to raise the Pandavas. Bhishma Dev was like the grandfather. Well, guess who's on the other side? Oh, Bhishma Dev, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, the brothers, father, grandfather of Arjuna and the Pandavas. And who else? His guru, the one who taught him how to kill, how to destroy, how to fight. Dronacharya, his guru, the guru of all the Pandavas, the weapon master. And now that person who taught him how to use the weapons, he's now going to use his weapons to kill him. And it's too much. Arjuna's thinking, how I can do that? That's cruel. That's immoral. It's not noble. It's not the behavior of a gentleman. What gentleman will want to fight against his guru, who's taught him everything he knows about fighting? What kind of thing is that? Recently, this accusation came, I think it was intended against me. It was made against the leaders, the senior leaders of our mission, that you brothers can, what kind of example you brothers are showing fighting with each other in a hateful way. Well, what kind of example is Arjuna showing? The perfect example. That what is right, that's what you must establish, not what is comfortable. It wasn't comfortable for Arjuna to fight with his relatives. It was uncomfortable for him. Naturally, it was uncomfortable. It was torture. How, imagine. He loved these people. He loved them. Why wouldn't he? That's what happens. When you grow up with family, you love them, right? Naturally. But they did something which they should not have done. They took a kingdom, they took something that was not theirs to be taken. It should not have been taken. Dhritarashtra had no right to install his son as the king. And Yudhishthira was the proper recipient of the kingdom, not Duryodhana. So Dhritarashtra had no right, but he was blind. Not only because he had no vision, no physical vision, he was blinded by his affection for his son. He couldn't see equally. He raised the five Pandavas and his own sons. He raised them both. He should have been like a father to both. He should have been equally disposed to all of them. He had 105 sons, in essence. Five stepsons that he raised, who came to him as orphans, and 100 of his own sons. But why, and he was charged with the responsibility, and he accepted the responsibility, and he agreed that I will raise these five as if they are my own, and Yudhishthira, he will become the king. But then he was blinded by sentiment, by emotion, by blood is thicker than water. So when it came time to install Yudhishthira, and Dhritarashtra was overcome by his emotion, by his sentiment. So instead of doing the right thing, he did what he wanted to do. He did what made him comfortable, what he thought would give him happiness. He thought it would give him happiness to see that his blood-born son was installed rather than the rightful king, Yudhishthira Maharaj. So, and he couldn't do it legally, so a contrivance, way it was figured out to do it illegally, by cheating. So they arranged this chess match. We talked about this before. Yudhishthira had all Kshatriyas have a tendency to gamble. They enjoy gambling, just, and in their off hours when they're not killing, they're gambling. They're drinking and cavorting and gambling, and very much like our military men of today. I remember seeing these war movies of like World War II, and in their off hours, people throwing dice, you know, they're gambling with dice. And that's what, you know, the soldiers do in their off hours. How to pass away, pass the time. They're away from their families often, you know, and they're on the battlefield or something, that they have some spare time, and drinking, you know, forget the tomorrow's battle. They don't want to face that, so they're drinking, and they're, you know, enjoying the best foods that they can have and whatever, and take their mind off of the business of killing and so forth. But that's my speculation. I don't know actually why they do it, but anyway, it seems to be some sort of culture among the warriors. And so actually they enjoy killing. It's not, you know, they in some sense they want to kill. How can you be a warrior if you're not willing to kill others? So the Kshatriyas, but not killing for killing's sake, killing for righteousness. Killing because someone deserves to be killed. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's that's the nature of a warrior, a Kshatriya, to uphold the truth, to uphold what is virtuous, what is righteous, what is good. And who trespasses on those things, then deal with him, punish him. If not by killing, by some other means, imprisonment or something. So anyway, the Dhritarashtra couldn't get what he wanted legally, in an authorized fashion. He couldn't get what he wanted. And Duryodhana knew that. And Duryodhana also wanted the same thing. He wanted to, he, you know, was wanted to be the king. He didn't want Yudhishthira to become the king. He wanted position. He wanted power, position, etc., wealth. So he couldn't get it legally. He couldn't get it by proper means. So they devised a cheating means. And the cheating means was that this chess match, and knowing that Yudhishthira, if Yudhishthira was challenged to play the game of chess, that he would accept the challenge. And the stakes, you know, started off reasonable and kept increasing until finally the stakes were everything that Yudhishthira owned. And what did he own? The kingdom. And the proof that he owned it, the proof that it was his to be gambled away, was that that he offered it as the stakes for the gambling match. So everyone knew that the Yudhishthira was a rightful heir to the kingdom. And therefore he had the right to put it up as a bet, as the stakes in the game. And which he did, and of course he lost the match, the chess match. And being an honorable person, and he gave everything. He honored his bet. He paid his debt. And part of the deal was, oh, that he will have to be exiled. All the Pandavas will be exiled to the forest where they have to live in disguise for 14 years. And so they did that also. Anyway, so truth gets modified through speculation and because people want things that they should not have. Because Dhritarashtra wanted something that he should not have, that was not given to him. So he changed the rules, made his own rules. I want my son to have the kingdom, so whatever has to be done to get my way, I'll do that. So this is how things become modified. We don't like to follow the four regulative principles. Oh, so let's discard them. Let's say that, it's Kali Yuga, so it's not necessary to follow the four regulative principles. What is really vital is chanting Hare Krishna. If one chants Hare Krishna, then there's no need to follow the four regulative principles. No, wrong. Wrong. We can't just say what we want. That would be very nice. Yes, I don't have to do anything, and I will be taken up to the spiritual world. And on my part, I have to do nothing. That's what we want. That would be very nice. Leela Sundari sometimes is very frustrated, and she says, she complaining, I can't take it anymore. I can't stand it anymore. I just can't take it. What can't you take? I can't take this material world. It's too much. Well, then leave it. We don't have to take it. We can leave it. Why don't you leave it? We don't leave it because we have attachments. That's why. And it's those attachments which bind us here. And then we feel trouble because we're bound by our attachments. And we say, I can't take it. But I'm... I'm inviting it. The thing that I don't want, I'm inviting it. And if not inviting it, at least I'm so attached that I can't leave it. I don't want to leave it. Here's the higher thing. Here's the tasteful thing. You leave the lower thing, accept the higher thing. Yes, I don't want this lower thing. I want the higher thing. Oh, here's what you have to do to get it. No, I want to have it without doing those things. Well, it doesn't work that way. That's childish. The child, wants to have candy without earning the money to pay for it. And the child can have that because the parents, it's their responsibility to look after the child. He has guardians. So the child can get what he wants without working for it. Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes good behavior is demanded of the child also. Well, you'll get the candy if you behave nicely. That's also there. So, what we want Krishna consciousness. We don't want birth, death, old age, and disease. We want to live as spirit souls. Okay, live as a spirit soul. Then give up the attachments to the mundane world. Leave the anartas that are holding you back. And you'll get everything that you want, no problem. And those who are fortunate, they get a guru who will guide them, who will step by step take them by the hand and guide them. Do this, do this, do this. Oh, you did this? That was wrong. Don't do that again. That requires a living guru. Some religious traditions depend on the ancient guru. The guru that passed away dozens, hundreds, and even thousands of years ago. And I said one time, maybe I wrote in an article, it's very convenient to follow the guru who has passed away. It's very easy to follow a guru who is no longer living, who is no longer there to tell you when you do something wrong. I wrote a song called Dream Guru. The guru of our dreams. The guru of my dreams is the guru who, whatever I want to do, he gives ditto to that. His stamp is, yeah, oh, you want to do thus and such? I stamp my approval. You want to eat meat? Here's my approval. Yes, you can do it. You want to, enjoy sex life? Here's my stamp. Yes, you can do that also. You want to, whatever, you want to live as a mundane person and claim to be my follower? Here, yes, I stamp that. Yes, that's a dream guru. It's not real guru. So dream guru will not help us. The living guru, Mahanta guru, that is necessary. And now, we find even our tradition, Swami Maharaj, he established a great worldwide organization, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he gave us everything we needed to know. Gave us Bhagavad Gita, gave us Chaitanya Charitamrita, at great inconvenience and trouble to himself. He didn't ask for a comfortable life. He accepted a life of austerity to do good for others. And that's also a symptom of guru. But he's not a selfish person. So he is willing to exert himself for the benefit of others. He's willing to live an uncomfortable life for the benefit of others and to serve his own guru. So we know the story of Swami Maharaj. We're reading some of these letters from his early days in New York. before that. He suffered so much. Alone in one chapter of Prabhupada Lilamrita of Satsrup Maharaj, I think it's called Crying Alone in the Wilderness. Is that the life anyone wants? Anyone volunteering to cry alone in the wilderness? No, there's no line forming for that, right? That job. But that's how Satsrup Maharaj characterized it. And that's what it was. Prabhupada was alone. And who was listening to him? No one. But he continued because he had an ideal and a goal, an ideal which was a high ideal which he wanted to follow and which he wanted to establish. And the ideal was that he will establish the teachings of his guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's what he wanted to do. That was the charge given him by his guru, and that's the charge given by every guru to his disciples. So Brahma gave that charge to his disciples. He was the original Adi Guru, Brahma, Lord Brahma, Brahma. So he gave that to his disciples, and they to theirs, etc., etc. But it became modified. And so when it becomes modified, does that mean that then there's no hope any longer? Oh, it's become modified and modified again and again and again and again. It's all lost. No, it's not all lost. And why it's not all lost? Because the Lord also comes and to reestablish the principles of religion. Yada yada hi dharma sha glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharma sha tarayate mahatobaya. No. Abhyutanam adharma sha tadatmanam shrijamyaham. Whenever the principles of religion are lost, I come myself to reestablish them. He incarnates. But that doesn't always mean that he comes as the Yuga Avatar. So he comes as Yuga Avatar, and one of his purposes as Yuga Avatar is to establish the principles of religion or re-establish them. But he also does that through his agents as Acharyang Mang Vijaniyang. Krishna comes in the form of Madhavendra Puri, in the form of Ishvara Puri, in the form of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the form of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, in the form of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and Srila Bhaktivakak Shuradev Goswami Maharaj, and etc. Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj. Because if it weren't for that, then there would be deviation, deviation, deviation. Another word for modification. And modify, modify, modify. Change, 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 right? And progress has become synonymous with change, or change synonymous with progress. In other words, progress is taken to be what is changed is considered progress, rather than actual progress. Progress doesn't necessarily mean change. It means change in the right way. Change from bad to good, that's progress. But simple change is not necessarily progress, because change can be from good to bad also, right? That's change. That's not progress. Right? Right, Leela Sundari?
Right.
No. So here, what we're hearing from Brahma to his disciples, their disciples, their disciples, there's change. Is it progress? No, it's not progress. It's only change. Well, what is progress? Oh, what Madhavendra Puri gave to us. What is progress? What Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave. What did Bhaktivinoda Thakur give? He reestablished what Mahaprabhu gave. Mahaprabhu showed progress. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, new philosophical concept, previously not established by any acharya, major acharya of one of the Vaishnava sampradayas. They had other philosophical ideas. But Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference, the absolute truth, simultaneously one and different from so many things. And Srila Sridharmaya said, everywhere we can find that principle, simultaneous oneness and difference. Things have similar, same quality and different quality at the same time. So the jiva, simultaneously one with and different from his maker, his origin, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's similar. How is he similar? He's a spiritual entity. He's not a material entity. The jiva is a spiritual entity. Krishna is a spiritual entity. And the Mayavadis, they misunderstand what that means. Aham Brahmasmi. I am that.
That thou art.
I am that. Because he is spirit. I am spirit. I am him. I am that. I am Brahman. Right? Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. No, you're Brahman. You're not God. You know, God is also Brahman. But he's much more than that also. But the more part you don't know about. So therefore you misunderstand. You don't get it. You see the insignificant part and you think that's everything. God is spiritual light. Yes, that's the insignificant part. The significant part is where the light is coming from. Coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so you're also a personality, you're a jiva. So similar again, once again, similar to him, similar to God, but different. Because why? Because nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. Eko bahunam yo vidhati kamam. They're unlimited spiritual entities, but they are not all the same. Why? Because there is one who is the creator of all of the others. So, we are not the same as our creator. Right? He is unlimitedly great, and we are unlimitedly small. He is infinitely big, and we are infinitely tiny. There's a difference. That's a difference, right? So, all of these things have to be understood. And change, for change's sake, is meaningless. It doesn't say anything, good or bad. Oh, it's change. That doesn't mean progress. Change can mean going in the wrong direction. I change bodies. Oh, I became a dog. Oh, is that good? All right, is that good? Well, no, probably not. But it's change. It's change. So I change what our guru gave. Is it to be changed? If you can change it and make it better, then that's okay. That's also possible. That happens through revelation. Because we accept revelation. We accept divine revelation. We accept progress through divine revelation. But that is not a cheap thing. Change what the previous acharyas gave, because I abandon that to offer some innovation. Everyone wants to innovate, but is it a good innovation or not? Leela Sundar, you always having these invention ideas, right?
But,
you know,
what if I make this and put it in there?
Yeah.
And put this part in and then part this.
A lot of them don't work, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, just innovation, not necessarily a good thing, maybe a very bad thing, in fact. Mm-hmm. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he introduced, Krishna came as the Acharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he incarnated in the person of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as the Acharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to reestablish what had been lost in Gaudadesh and throughout India after everyone was converted to Mahaprabhu's principles. Then gradually, in a short time, in 500 years, 400 and some, not even 500, 400 some odd years, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw it's all been ruined. It's all been polluted. Not entirely all, but almost all polluted, contaminated, distorted, perverted. Yeah, all changed from pure to filthy. From pure to filthy. What is Sahajism? That means the pure thing. It looks like Vaishnavism. It looks like what Mahaprabhu taught. Only it's become changed. Now it's filthy. Doesn't resemble the original item in any real fashion. Externally, something, but internally, polluted. Well, that's mostly what happened with after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then so many white-clad Babajis running around Vrindavan and Navadvip and other places, and but behaving like mundane people. And their consciousness, and it's bad enough, you know, to follow strictly the principles of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That's not an easy matter. It's a, you know, it's a challenge for the conditioned soul. It's a challenge. And everyone is not up to it. So there will be fall down. Prabhupada talked about that. And all our gurus talk about that. You will fall down. You may have difficulty. You may have trouble. But then you learn from your mistake. And you try to improve and you become better and you don't make the same mistake over and over and over. Do better, do better. Remember the flaw. Don't repeat it. And then you'll make progress in that way. Learning from our mistakes, we'll make progress. So that's okay. We are weak. We may fall. But we should try to be strong. We should try to always be improving our strength. And how do we improve our strength? Through association with those who are strong. Through association of the Vaishnavas. And particularly, especially, who is better than us? Try to associate with them because they will push us to be better. Right? So therefore, we are always encouraged. Try to seek the association of the higher Vaishnava. Because the higher Vaishnava will encourage you to be a better Vaishnava, to be a higher Vaishnava also. And he will help you. You have a mistake, you fall down, you deviate, you modify, or he will correct you. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he came for our correction. He came to correct what had been where the deviations occurred from the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came to correct them, and he established the proper teachings, and he encouraged his disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to do the same thing. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not so eager for the job. he did not want the job. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur insisted, talk very nice things. You are a great scholar. You have studied the works of Sri Chaitanya. So many things. you've acquired as your knowledge. And the result of that is, you want to be a Mayavadi? Bhaktivinoda Thakur asking Saraswati Thakur. You want to sit peacefully. That's what you want, a life of peace. Because to undergo to undertake the job of creating a mission for the preaching of the precepts of Sri Chaitanya, Saraswati Thakur thought, no, I'm doing Nam Bhajan. That's, you know, I'm happy with that. I'm not interested in what the difficulties that will ensue, that will come about from trying to organize and establish Krishna consciousness in an organized fashion, taking disciples and training them and making temples and printing books and collecting money and all the things, collecting men and money. These are, you know, difficult things. They are troublesome things. And training them. And Prabhupada said one time, I'm sure that he wrote this in a letter to Satsarup Maharaj. I could never find the letter, but maybe it's because Satsarup Maharaj only told it to me and I don't remember it perfectly or something. But I remember Satsarup Maharaj said that Prabhupada wrote him a letter that Satsarup Maharaj was complaining. It was about the difficulty that he was I believe he was a sannyasi at this time, and he was, you know, preaching and visiting different temples and so forth, and much to his chagrin, found that things are going on that should not be going on in the temples. That the devotees who are the so-called quote bhaktas were not behaving necessarily as bhaktas. They were not catching the philosophical truths that Srila Prabhupada was preaching and teaching, and maybe behaving also badly. And so Satsarup Maharaj was expressing his troubledness, his difficulty with this. Prabhupada said, it is not easy for the sane person to deal with the insane. Naturally, a sane person will not welcome that job. That the sane man will have to deal with the insane and try. He said, but it is our duty to make the insane into sane. And that is not an easy or welcomed job for anyone, to try and take the insane and make them into sane people. And why? Because they are insane. So they don't, you know, how are you going to make the insane into sane? So, but that's our job. That's the job of the preacher. So, yeah, it's not easy and it's troublesome. I hope Janardhan Maharaj won't mind me saying this. I don't think he will. He said that there were two things that were the most troublesome thing in his life and which he found to be the most unpleasant. One was his married life. Previously he was married. And the other thing, having disciples. So these things, they are not the things which really give pleasure. In the beginning it seems, oh yeah, there's a woman, she's very beautiful, she's so sweet, she's this and that, and very enticing. And then you marry that woman, and it's not in every case, but in many cases, then the woman becomes unhappy and the man becomes unhappy. The man is thinking, oh, the woman is very nice, and then gradually he begins to realize, you know, it's odd. All those things which I found most appealing before our marriage are now the most annoying. The most appealing things about her character, her nature, before we were married, that I found very appealing, now they are the most the things which annoy me most about her. They are the things that are her nature that you can't get rid of. And the woman, she is thinking, I married this man because I knew what he was before we married, and I thought I can change him and make him what I want him to be. But they marry, and the woman finds, you know, sometimes she's not so lucky. She's not able to change the man and make him into her image of what he should be. So then she's unhappy. So anyway, this is... So... we are not seekers of comfort. We didn't join this mission. We should not have joined. We should not have the idea that training in knowledge of the Absolute, being trained to serve the Absolute, pursuing a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we should not think that this is an easy task which will not be challenging. And Srila Sridhar Maharaj said something like this: the finite is chasing after the infinite. What an audacious attempt. Such an audacious attempt. The finite is trying to capture the infinite. That's what Krishna consciousness is. We're trying to capture the infinite. Not for our purposes, but to make him mine, in the sense that he is my beloved and I will be his beloved. But I make him mine, meaning he will love me. I want him to love me. That's what it is. So, how will you do? What is your qualification for that? That you will attract the love, the affection, everything from the infinite, supreme, absolute personality of Godhead, who has everything, who has unlimited everything. Unlimited everything. But it's not hopeless. Because he is so... His nature is that he loves his devotees. And if you become his devotee, then he will love you. And you will get what you will capture him. Through your love, through your affection for him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's an example of revelation. It's that suddenly, apparently out of nowhere, the Lord appears, reveals himself and his substantial form through his devotee, through Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the necessary work to reestablish the principles that were established by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, his devotees and followers. And that sort of revelation, that sort of modification, that sort of change for the better, that is real progress. That's what progress is. That the thing that had been modified so that it was unrecognizable, to restore it, to make it recognizable again, to restore it to its pure, its pristine condition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared for that purpose. That was the reason for his appearance. And when that occurs, then we have what Srila Sridhara Maharaj referred to as the telescopic system. We have the gurus become another lens in the telescope, which makes the telescope the focus further and sharper, further and clearer. We can see further and with more clarity the object that we are trying to view, that we want to view. So the true acharyas, they are not opaque, they are transparent. But they're not only, they're more than transparent, they're magnifiers. So they don't cloud our vision of the Absolute, they enhance it. They improve it. They magnify it. That's what the true acharya, what he does. So these great acharyas, the ones that I've mentioned, their position is like that. And because sometimes it happens that the vision of the Absolute becomes, becomes distant, becomes clouded, perverted, etc. And necessary to reestablish. We've lost the telescope. We've lost the ability to see. And they come and they establish. And what has been modified, what has been changed, what is in the wrong way, perverted, they reestablish it in its proper way. And then, this is the progressive line of Krishna consciousness. Simply to establish the thing as it is, without modification, without change. And that is only done, that is only possible when the disciple is obedient to his guru, like we saw with Srila Govinda Maharaj. If there is anything apparent about Srila Govinda Maharaj, it was his remarkable, unmistakable obedience to his guru. That is how you capture the infinite. How do you capture the infinite? Through surrender. Obedience means surrender. I surrender to the Absolute. Oh, then he's helpless. He's helpless to refuse such a surrendered soul. Oh, this person, like I mentioned the other day, Lokanath and Narottam. Lokanath was determined. He will not accept any disciples. He was determined. But Narottam was determined to make him accept him as his disciple. He asked Lokanath, please accept me as your disciple. No, I'm not doing that. But Narottam had received the inspiration from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take Lokanath Das Goswami as his guru. And through his dedication, the dedication of Narottam Das Thakur, he converted Lokanath from non-guru to guru. His devotion to Lokanath with Das Goswami was so extreme that Lokanath, who is determined not to, guru means immovable. He's immovable. He was determined not to accept any disciple. But one of his surrendered soul, Narottam Das Thakur, was so determined to serve Lokanath Das Goswami that Lokanath Das Goswami was converted from non-guru to guru. Of course, he was guru in other ways. He is the universal guru. But he was not accepting any, not doing diksha, not accepting disciples. But he accepted Narottam Das Thakur. So the jiva has that power. We have the power. We have the power to attract the attention of the Absolute, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through our devotion, through our surrender. All right. Jai Sparikar, Sri Sri Guru Granga, Sri Sri Gandharvika Giridhari Ju Ki Jai. Gaur Hari Gaur.